Yes, sir. Wow. Here we go. Look who it is. Ah, it's Chuck Early, Sherry Elicker Show. There you are.
I am right here.
Tennessee Lamb.
I'm getting an echo. Thank you. No more
echo.
And you'll
be right on that.
Yep, got that. And I had trouble getting my headphones on. Boy, it's off to a good start.
Okay. Headphones go on your head.
Oh, well, you should have mentioned that before.
Right over those little Tennessee Lamb ears. All right, let's get at it. Come on, stop flirting with me, Sherry. somebody wrote in yesterday, you don't make as much big deal of drying off as you used to. So there you go. You critical listener, you. Okay. Wow, look at all this. So we had the story the other day that there was a bit of a brouhaha there in Burien. They had some problems. I think one of the city council members said that moving homeless people along that are sleeping in the streets and sidewalks and stuff, it's white supremacy. Why not? Math is racist, so why wouldn't that be racist? So they had a big vote yesterday, and let's see. Well, it's close. It's close. Mm-hmm. This seems to be a tide that is now sort of sweeping across the West Coast, and now Burien joins the rest of the crowd. Here it is.
And start working on sustainable solutions.
After months of debate and back and forth on how to handle the homelessness crisis in Burien,
where's your empathy, kindness, and respect?
A public camping ban is the solution that passed at the city council meeting Monday night.
This is getting ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. We just want people to be safe.
All those in favor.
Ordinance 818 passed by a razor-thin margin.
Ordinance 818, please raise your hand or say aye.
4 in favor and 3 opposed.
Yes, I will be voting for it. And yes, I'll take the heat that comes from it because that's why I ran for office.
The ordinance bans camping in public spaces between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. It also makes camping a misdemeanor but would not criminalize someone if a shelter bed isn't available. The ordinance also allows the city manager to set aside specific areas used for public camping. It's modeled after the camping ban in Bellevue.
Okay, so there you go. So Burien joins other Snohomish cities, Marysville as well. They started this a while ago, which was the three strikes you're out, basically. Come along. You're going to move? No. You're going to get shelter? No. Okay, we're going to arrest you. You're addicted to drugs. We're going to put you in jail. So others have done this. Now, San Francisco is going to be doing it as well. They recently have asked, they don't know if it's going to go to the Supreme Court, but hey, allow us to at least address this problem in a more sensible way as opposed to what the Ninth Circuit put in place in 2018, which it says, you know, under, I think, for part of the Constitution. It's a fourth, fifth, cruel and unusual. It's a fourth, or fifth, I can't remember. That having somebody who wants to sleep on a sidewalk and asking them to move along or asking them to kill them, they can't sleep there under the cruel and unusual, forbidding that U.S. Constitution. The Ninth Circuit said you can't do anything. So then we saw it sweep all into all cities across the West Coast, just about, plus Austin, Texas, had big problems. So now, like, we got to do something about this. So it looks like the courts, I think the Fifth Circuit has said, yeah, we want to give you more power. So Burien joins the crowd, and some other cities as well. Because, and Seattle will have to. Why do you think Seattle is going to have to do the same thing?
Well, I think Seattle is going to have to do the same thing if the ruling is the same, which this one in San Francisco is based on something called involuntary homeless. Now, if you are involuntarily homeless, then, and you refuse a shelter bed, then they're saying you, the city then has a right to clear that area. So they're saying it's a plan forward to enforce laws against voluntarily homeless people. These are the people that choose to break the law and stay in a encampment or a tent or whatever when the, when it's trespassing.
Right.
If they've offered something, you know, if you say, hey, we got a shelter bed over here and we're going to take your stuff or whatever. And some of this happened because they, a lot of the homeless people have tried to sue the city or ask for $10,000.
They get it. But, and they get it too, sure.
Yeah.
Because, so, yeah, I had a whole bunch of really good stuff there and you swept it all up. So I need a check for like $5,000 or $10,000. And they all know what to ask for. So when they would put, they would submit their application, they all had similar great qualities of wonderful products that were swept away by the city.
Right. So I think if this is going to set a precedent, being able to label something as voluntary versus involuntary, then like everything else that sort of starts in California, it will probably move to Seattle and Portland and other cities.
Right. Well, also just locally, just think about it. So if Burien says you got to move along, Marysville says you got to move along, other cities say you got to move along, well, then people are like, oh, then I'm going to go to Seattle because Seattle doesn't hassle me. I'm going to go to Seattle. Seattle knows they would get everybody that was getting pushed out of these other cities, and they would just come to Seattle. So they sort of see the writing on the wall, and they started thinking about, okay, what can we do about this? Maybe we can join others, and at least we'll say, oh, we've got the courts behind us, and that'd be enough to kind of quiet the ACLU and some other left organizations that want to allow people to continue to live on the streets. So just moving on to the other topic, which is the fact that Target has closed. These are the stores. How many Target stores are closed? I think seven or something across the West Coast, but there's two in Seattle or one in Seattle?
Two are closing in Seattle.
Okay. Yeah.
Two are closing in Seattle, and then there are ones closing in San Francisco, in Portland, I think in Chicago. They're closing nine stores across the country because of safety concerns. They have 2,000 stores in the U.S., New York, Seattle, San Francisco, and Portland. Two of the locations are in Seattle.
That's a shame. That one in Seattle on the corner there, it's a great Target. It's had everything. I think it was like three stories high. I remember when they put it in there, and it was all excited. It's a beautiful store, but right there in Seattle, and you get all sorts of people. Joe Mama, were you able to find that? What?
Yeah, that one's staying.
No, wait a minute. So which one is closing in Seattle?
They're closing one in the U District and one in Ballard, but that one is apparently has enough, you know, normal customers that they're keeping it open.
Hey. We don't throw around the word normal.
My bad, sir.
Yeah, okay.
Not on this show.
They're closing the one in University District?
One in University District. I don't know if there's more. I don't think there is. Not the one, what is it, White Center? I don't believe it's that one, but yeah, one in the
University. Okay, yeah. They're having a normal sale. Come on down, everybody. 20% off for all normal people. Here's the problem.
Along with other retailers, we've seen a significant increase in theft and organized retail crime across our business.
That was Target's CEO on the company's quarterly earnings call Wednesday discussing...
Sounded like a robot.
CEO Target.
CEOIA.
Robot. AI.
AICIO. CAOI.
Robot. Retailers, we've seen a significant increase in theft and organized retail crime across our business.
That was Target's CEO on the company's quarterly earnings call Wednesday discussing what they call inventory shortage or shrink. In layman's terms, theft.
Year to date, incremental shortage has already reduced our gross margin by more than $400 million versus last year, and we expect it will reduce our gross margin by more than $600 million for the full year.
More than half a billion dollars due to what the industry calls organized retail crime.
Yes, so out they go. They could do what Chicago's decided to do, the mayor of Chicago. He's upset because so many grocery stores are closing in so many neighborhoods, and he says it's not fair to the people that they live in like a food desert. And if the private sector doesn't want to be in there because they're just, I don't know how we referred to them, you know, they were too concerned with making profit or something. So what will the mayor of Seattle hope to have there in their place, Sherry?
The mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, has said that what they think might work is government-run food stores. Six grocery stores have closed in 2 years on the south side and the west side, and they're saying that, you know, this is the way that we can make sure people get what they need. They don't live in a food desert. But there's a few questions that people are asking. Like, okay, what makes you think there's not going to be shoplifting at the government stores? Like, what's going to be different? Are you providing additional security, a different kind of security? How is it that you believe that having a store in the same neighborhood, just run by a different entity, is really going to work?
Oh, such a great question. That's every day.
I don't have the answer. All Chicagoans deserve to live near convenient, affordable, healthy grocery options. We know access to grocery stores is already a challenge, especially the South and West. I'm proud to work alongside partners to take the step in envisioning what municipally could be owned grocery stores in Chicago could look like. Yeah, I'm sure that'll run well. Yeah, because he said the other places were too concerned with making a profit.
Imagine so that. A business? Have you ever heard of that? I've never heard of that. A business wanting to make a profit? What?
That's so loud, dumb. Sherry. Don't remind Bonneville. What are we in this for? The fact that this guy would even propose that, right? And that people would be like, yeah, sounds a good idea. You know, have the government run the grocery store. And they wouldn't need to run it. They wouldn't need to make a profit. Well, of course they don't have. Government doesn't make profits. So then you would be subsidizing this thing. So people would come in there, steal, rob, whatever from the place. And then they would just start pouring money into it to keep it going. And then it would just basically at that point come on in, steal what you'd like, because it doesn't matter because all the taxpayers of Chicago will be paying to replace everything you steal off the shelves. It's a pretty good plan. If you just want to have the government just running something like that. Don't even have prices on anything, right? Just come on in, take wherever you like.
What? Yeah, but who's paying for these stolen items? We are. City of Chicago. Taxpayers.
Well, it wouldn't matter. Right, but that's okay because, tax the rich. They don't need it. The other law that passed recently in California is that an employer cannot force – an employer is not allowed to make the employees do anything about the shoplifters.
Right.
They basically just wrote it into the law because most employers weren't going to do it anyway because of the insurance. But in this case, they're going to codify it with law. So now it is a law in California that no employee can do anything about the shoplifting. Nothing.
Yeah, are they committing a crime if they intervene?
They are. People have been fired for that because they tried to stop something.
But they've been fired by the corporations. But that's a good question, Jermon. But would the state step in and charge the employee? Probably not. This is probably just put in place so that you don't have some employer going, now listen to me. When you see that guy come in, you jump on his back. I need three guys on him, high and low, okay? And I'll start kicking him in the jewels, all right? That's going to be the rule. So it's basically to try to protect the employer from the employee or the employee from the employer. I can't imagine any employer telling somebody, you know, I'll give you a bonus if you knock the guy out. People just let him walk in and walk back out again. So, when Rye was working at Home Depot, he said he used to see him come in steal all the time. They'd steal power tools and just watch him come in. And they were told, say hello to the person when they walk in, look them in the eye, ask them if there's anything you can do to help them. They did find, and you know who does this? Is Marshalls does this, and so does Ross. They've got a guy there in the front of the store when you walk in, just right there at the door. They'll say, good afternoon, how you doing today? And they find that to be some, I don't know if you're really intent on stealing something, but they just sort of having somebody greet you at the door sends a signal to a possible shoplifter that, I don't know, maybe they're watching more. You ever walked into a Ross or a Marshalls, Sherry? I'm sorry. I know you wouldn't shop in those type of stores. You have people to put your headphones on for you. So you're unaware of
it. I have. No, I have. Absolutely, I have.
But for the rest of us regular people.
And I always wondered about that because you go in and it's usually somebody and they're kind of half asleep and they're like, you know, hi, welcome to Ross. And I just wondered, what's the theory here? Are they really doing customer service? Because this guy's not really representing them that well.
Or it's crime prevention. It is crime prevention.
But yeah. What is it? Do you think it's that the customer then feels some...
Someone's watching them.
Something
That's
guilt,
the theory.
Any kind of guilt, like, oh, they humanize them by saying hello and this and that.
Yep. That's what they tell them. They tell them that and then go up to customers and say, hey, can I help you with anything? Is there anything you need? Let me know. They say that human contact, just letting them, and it also sort of reinforces someone's watching you. Because if you walk in there, you look kind of shady, you're thinking, gosh, nobody sees me. I'm going to take something. No one's going to see me. But if you walk up to the person, hey, let me know if I can help you with any of those power tools. And Home Depot and I think the manufacturer of these tools now have this thing where if you take it, it won't work for you until you download or you scan some receipt that you bought the thing on a QR code, which then unlocks the power tool. So that's the smartest thing they've come up with recently because you're stealing these Milwaukee or whichever one has it in there. The thing is basically not worth anything until you are able to activate it by showing the receipt for it. Pretty smart.
Yeah, that is smart, unless they found a new way to utilize that tool without it having to be activated. Like, can they use it for something else?
Yeah, you can always use any tool as a hammer. That's what I've learned. Every tool is a hammer.
You know where figured out the shoplifting thing is that the QFC on Broadway and Pike in Capitol Hill, which is the
you
one
like
I
to go there
to.
And rip them off, Joe? Mama, is that where you like to go?
That's where I grocery shop. But that place used to be, I mean, you felt like you were in danger just walking in there. Now you go in there, you feel like you're in a police state. They got about five security guards. They funnel you in through one particular entrance. If you start walking in there with your pants off, they're going to shuffle you right out. It's wild, but they've got it figured out.
Do you know this because you tried to shuffle your way in there with your pants off?
No, I've watched people come in there with no pants on, and they just grab them and they haul them right out.
Oh, no pants, no service. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, are they in their underwear? Or like, what you know,
did Pike
on?
And Broadway and Capitol Hill? Have you been there?
Like a John Fetterman kind of shopper?
I mean, like you get all manner of customers in there. Most of them don't know what state they're in, let alone what store they're in.
Okay. Thank you, Joe, for the insight.
You're welcome.
We learned a lot in that segment.
Yeah. And I mean, there's anecdotal evidence, too, like Joe has.
Still shopping there, Joe?
Yeah. At least once a week.
Sure. All right. We'll get your shopping list. We'll put it up on our Facebook page and our Instagram page. Sure, we have an Instagram page now.
I heard that. That's very exciting. And a YouTube channel.
How'd you hear that? Did you read that on a fax I sent over to you? Do we have an Instagram page now?
The courier brought it.
All right. Big problems out here in the country, Sherry. I got too many pumpkins. I don't know what to do with them, so I'm trying to figure that out. Might do something. Take it over to Mike's Tavern and bring like 300 pumpkins over there and dump them off at night.
What's the approximate count at this point?
320.
320. Okay.
You got an average weight?
Joe.
I'm just kidding.
They're big.
Oh, such a great question. That's ask myself that every day.
Thank you, Lee. Yes. Anyway, I got to figure out what to do with that. I was thinking of it just going to invite a bunch of listeners, come over, we'll have some food and music and some brewskis. And then I thought, I'm not doing that. Anyway, all right, moving on. Sounded like a good idea. And I thought, that could be out of control fast. And yeah, people Joe Mama going around, what do you think this one weighs? Sound Transit is asking its riders, what would be fair? You know, what's fair? I like the fact that they're asking the riders, how much you want to pay? The question comes down to, do you want to pay, like, you go a short distance and you pay X, and then you pay a little bit more of a longer distance, or you just want to do a flat fee all the way across, $4 or $5? If you ask people what do they want to pay, I'm sure the answer is, how about nothing? Right? So this is the new question for Sound Transit, what the fare should be.
Yeah. I mean, it's a survey that they've put out there. It's going to be looked at in the next few weeks. But the distance, the flat rates are like $3, $3.25, $3.50. And they have to decide whether or not, you know, what makes most sense. Do you really want to pay three bucks if you're only going like a couple of stops? Or is it easier then to just, you know, pay the flat fee so you don't have to figure anything out? You don't have to, they don't have to raise it like 25 cents or 50 cents. So they're considering that, though. They're considering an across-the-board boost of 25 to 50 cents. And, you know, they also want to think about parking fees. The park-and-rides were sort of emptied out during the pandemic. And now they're saying, you know, we've got more, you know, cars than we need. So we're going to have some priority parking for van pools and for you know, buses, I guess, and things like that. But everybody else should have to pay. And that would probably be, again, about $4 or $5.
So understanding that when it comes to their budget with Sound Transit, which they actually have a budget, they don't ever quite meet it. 40% of the revenue has to come from fare box collection. 40%. So the total amount of money that they get from your taxes, even though you would never step foot on any public transportation, they're taking your money, state's money, federal money, all that money. And then part of that included is 40% from the fare box. I think they only hit that once, which might have been like in 2017. People get on the thing and ride for free. Why? Because do people do what you inspect or expect? So they used to have fare enforcement people, but of course that's racist. So they got rid of them and now they have fare ambassadors. You get to wear an ill-fitting sort of blue vest. They give you a hat. And I think last year they had four four. And they were on average, I think the last time I checked was like one fare ambassador was checking for every 172,000 riders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you walk around and go, and it's all about education because that's the main point. It's not about confrontation. It's about educating the riding public on how to pay. I mean, they believe me, people know, oh, I see. You get an Orca card or you pay, you get a thing, you get on. You don't need to educate anybody. But they're really focusing on educating the young riders today because, oh, I wonder why. Excuse me, have you paid? No, I haven't. Oh, maybe you just don't understand how you pay. What a joke. They had four at one point. Apparently, like, administrators are supposed to go out as well. I don't know if they go out as well. They are desperately looking for people who want that job to basically be treated like crap by a bunch of people that don't want to pay to ride on the public transportation. So they're hiring right now if you want to get a job.
I did get some updated numbers if you want them.
All right, here we go.
Rachel Cunningham.
Because I asked, what, Joe Mama, I said, call them and find out how many tickets because they give you two warnings, which is ridiculous. Because did I give you a warning before? You look really familiar. No, I've never gotten a warning. Oh, okay. Then this is going to be your first warning. Uh-oh. Okay. Well, thanks. Okay. So they give you two warnings and then they give you, then they ding you for like 25 or 75 bucks or something like that. Right. So what'd you find out? How many tickets, how much revenue have they generated with this program?
They have issued exactly zero tickets to date, and they won't be issuing any. They're still kind of in the education process, like you described. She didn't know exactly when, but in the coming months, they plan to step it up to where it would actually have to be your fourth or fifth infraction before you got a real ticket.
Yeah. So, and they're investing $672 million over the next 25 years to, I guess, get this fair ambassador program ramped up. The other thing that they did was, you know, when they asked people, can you please give me your ID or can I see your fare, you know, your fare card or whatever to see or some proof of having paid for it. 39% of riders didn't show any kind of proof of payment and 41% wouldn't even show their ID. So compliance is at zero. But pretty much, I mean, just nobody's
paying
attention.
They need to be educated.
Yeah.
They need to be educated. Right. Listen, you got that job. I don't know what it's paying. They say you work an 8 to a 10 hour shift. You walk around, you educate people and you're the ambassador to bring communities together. Can you imagine walking up and down that train at like 11 o'clock at night? You know, no one on there has paid and you're going to be like going up to somebody. Excuse me. Can I see that you paid? No. Can I see ID? I need to write you a warning. No, you have no enforcement. They know that. So they just walk on by or you just don't bother saying anything to them. Just walk up and down the train, walk because they're not collecting whether or not this person's doing anything. If it's 600 and some million dollars and they keep putting all this money into this stuff, don't spend the money. People say, oh, put turnstiles in. You can't get in. The amount of money they'd have to spend on that, just make it free rather than continuing to pour the money. It's basically free now because so many people are riding for free. Just get rid of the ambassadors. Don't pay anybody. Make it free and then just let that go. Don't have that additional expense of trying to enforce this thing because you're not really enforcing it. Because, again, the whole reason they had a problem with it is because there's all racism in 2020. It's racism for the people to be stopped. Why are you stopping more black young riders than, you know, older Asian riders? Why are you getting those guys, according to other people? Why are you hitting them? You know, why are they stopping? Maybe they didn't have it, so they don't have the money. When I used to, I rode the train once, the R5 out of Bryn Mawr up to Philadelphia, 30th Street Station. The guy would come up, tickets, 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 tickets. He'd little click, 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 click thing. And he'd have like this little leather thing. He'd punch the buttons and then he'd go, ticket. And I'm like, I can't find it. Find it. And then he'd go up, come back. Where is it? I go, I don't have it. Okay, getting off the next stop. And the next stop, he'd come over, stand there, big heavy guy. He's like, okay, get off. And they'd just walk you over the thing and just dump you off there the next stop. And then, like, now you're stuck, like, six stops away. Now you're not home. Now you're not in 30th Street Station. You don't have any money. You got on the train. They kicked you off. Now you're really screwed. Now you got to walk all the way back. So.
Yeah, I saw that happen actually to like an 11-year-old girl. It was an Amtrak train ride to New York, and she was a little bit like belligerent with the conductor guy or the guy that was, you know, and she couldn't find her ticket. She goes, my family has my ticket. And he says, well, where's your family? Back there. Where back there? I mean, he was tough, you know. And then he yells to the rest of the train, I'm kicking this girl off at the next stop unless her family comes forward with her ticket.
Wow.
And he would have done it. Then they came forward and they said, sorry, we got separated, or there was some hoo-ha-ha or something like that. But I think if she had been a little less surly with him, he maybe wouldn't have taken a hard line, or maybe he never really would have, like, done that. But he wasn't messing around. And they say that now, John, only 7% of the revenue is made up of fares. 7%.
Right. It's lower than it was prior to the lockdown. Because, again, the city sends a signal. Garbage on the street, graffiti on the wall, people laying around smoking drugs. The city is sending a signal that nothing matters. Go ahead, get on that train. And who's going to give you a hard time about it? Just tell the guy to go, what's your name? My name is Joe. Joe what? Joe Mama, right? Or the other one is, what's your name? Jack. Jack what? Jack Rabbit. Try to catch me. And then you start running around the train. Not saying I didn't do that one time. Not in the train, but just running away from a police officer once.
What were what would have been the charge?
Drinking, underage drinking.
Oh, okay.
Guy caught me, though.
Did he?
Yeah, kicked my ankle out from behind me and then jumped on my back and said, don't mess with me. I was in Nam.
Oh.
Jack Rabbit.
Jack Rabbit.
All right. Okay. I thought it was a funny line. I think it was laughing so hard I couldn't get enough wind to keep running. All right, there's Nate, the Peak and Plumbing Traffic.
Because she thought it was funny.
Here we are. Sherry's always finding stories about how to save a marriage.
Is that a little transparent?
Let me know when we're back on.
Yeah. I think we may be back now. I'm not sure.
Andrew, you all right there? It's the Scandinavian sleep method. This is going to save marriages. Here we go.
My husband and I love Copenhagen. We've been a bunch of times, and every time we go, I say, when I get home, I'm going to give our house a Copenhagen-inspired makeover.
Is she in bed right now? Sounds like she's...
I'm going to do this. I'm going to go, guess what? When we're getting home, I'm going to do a Copenhagen makeover. Okay, is that all right with you?
And every time we go, I say, when I get home, I'm going to give our house a Copenhagen-inspired makeover, and then life gets busy, and I don't do it. But this time, we are doing it. This will be a series, and we're starting in the bedroom. And the most exciting part is we're going to be doing the Scandinavian sleep method. So in Copenhagen, not once have I slept with one duvet. It is always two twins, and we sleep so good. Like, no one's fighting over blankets. Nobody's too hot or too cold. It's absolutely amazing. I did a yellow duvet cover for that color blocking. I need to get yellow pillowcases. They did not come in the size I needed, so I will order those. But this is just absolutely the comfiest way to sleep. I 10 out of 10 recommend it. It could save marriages. Bye.
And when I wake up, I'll tell you more about it. Yeah. Yes. So the idea is that you don't share blankets, because blankets can become a problem. You may be too cold. She may be too hot. It's somebody's kicking them. Somebody's pulling on them. So you make the bed up like two twin beds. Well, you actually put the one, fitted sheet on, the other sheet, and then everybody gets their own blanket.
Whoa. She said there were two twin beds. They pushed them together?
Well, a king size bed is two twin beds usually. So.
Yeah, but there's nothing in the middle. There's no crack in the middle. It's a big king size bed. And then, you have to put two blankets on. I mean, Sherry, is there anything you need to tell us? Because, I mean, I got the amount of blankets and pillowcases and duvet covers, really?
No. I mean, I have a blanket on my bed in the summer because Trevor likes it so cold. I mean, it's freezing cold, and we have a ceiling fan, and that's going. So I get freezing cold. And so I always have my own little blanket. So. Uh-huh. It's not really a problem for me, but I just didn't know. Apparently, this is an issue with a lot of people in terms of stealing covers and just not having the Copenhagen makeover that they want.
I imagine you have like really, really cold feet too.
Well, no. Remember, I wear my socks to bed, which you're not supposed to.
Oh, that's right.
Do. Yeah,
that's right. I love that song. That's right. I was going to say something, but I thought, that's not worth bringing it up again. All the trouble we got into last time.
No, yeah, okay. I agree. You don't have to say anything more. Okay.
Oh, time go passed. Away, coyote.
Go away.
Time coyote. Has passed, but not that much time.
That's something we laugh about, you know, the retirement party.
A little scandal.
You know, come on. You've only been here for 4 days, right?
Hee-haw.
There we go. It's all right, Nathan.
Stay for a fifth.
I'll tell Joe this story
later. Tell Joe.
Listeners are like, huh? Aren't you supposed to be broadcasting right now? What about the rest of us?